Hey, what's going on, everyone? Welcome to another episode of About Abroad, where it's my job to introduce you to people who have built amazing lives for themselves in various foreign corners of the globe. We're talking with expats and thought leaders about moving abroad, remote work, visas, and all the fun and practical knowledge that you need to know to follow in their footsteps. If you've ever dreamed of making a life for yourself overseas, maybe working remotely or embracing long-term travel, retiring or studying abroad, or even just taking a peek inside life beyond your borders, you've landed in the right place. Hello, everyone. Thanks for tuning in and welcome back to another Q&A mailbag edition of About Abroad. For those of you that are new here or haven't heard one of these before, this is a little different than the normal interview style episodes that we do here. This is a mailbag edition. So every couple weeks, month or so, I dive into all your questions that you send in via email, social media, the contact form on the website, wherever it may be. And we tally up some of the most interesting ones, some of the most frequent questions, answer them for you here on the show. So hopefully it's interesting for those of you that don't send the questions in. Hopefully for those of you that did, we actually get to answer them. We don't get to all of them, but we do try to answer the questions that seem most pertinent to the whole audience. So if you have questions of your own that you'd like for us to get to on the next Q&A session, feel free to send those in. You can do so at chase@aboutabroad.com over email, or you can reach out to me on social media at DC Warrington, wherever you are on socials, and we have a contact form on aboutabroad.com as well. Let's go ahead and dive in. The first question is from Lily, who is currently in Honduras. She says, I see on social media that you're spending a lot of time in Italy right now, particularly in the north. I'm also thinking about spending some time there next year, but have never been. Can you share any insights on the area and things to do? So we actually had several questions like this over the last few weeks about this northern part of Italy, and she's correct. I've been spending a little bit of time up here, and I have to say it is completely blowing my mind with how beautiful it is. So I think a lot of us, when we go to Italy, when we think about Italy, the first places that come to mind are the obvious ones, right? Like Rome, Venice, Florence, maybe Milan, maybe the Cinque Terre along the coast, or even like, you know, Sicily or something like that. But what's often missed is this northern region where you have the Italian Alps, in particular the Dolomites, where I am, and some unbelievable natural beauty and history and culture and food. And so anyway, I think it's just an incredible part of the country. I've been really enjoying everything around Lake Garda. Lake Garda is a very interesting place because on the south side of it, it feels a bit touristy. The first time I ever went to Lake Garda, that was my first impression, was like, oh, this is extremely touristy. And during peak season, everywhere that's beautiful in Europe, it's probably going to feel that way to a degree, which was the case the first time I went. But nonetheless, the first time I went there several years ago, I thought, okay, yeah, it's nice, whatever, but there's lots of nice places in this country, so no big deal. Going back this time around and visiting the north end of Lake Garda, I am completely blown away because you have it's where the Dolomites really start to be visible. So you have the Dolomites dropping down into this big, giant, beautiful lake, which is also surrounded by some of the most picturesque, beautiful little villages and towns that you've ever seen. And then throwing into that, you have amazing weather because you have a little bit of altitude. So you're not like, you know, baking in the sun in the middle of summer. And at the same time, you know, you do have warm enough weather where there's like palm trees, snow-capped mountains in the background, beautiful transparent water, gorgeous towns. Of course, you have the classic Italian food. So this has been a real highlight for me and a place that I would throw on your map. If you're looking to go spend some time, just generally speaking, all around Lake Garda, there's lots of beautiful towns and places to go. There's also some decent sized little cities. If you're like, Verona is a city of about 250,000 people that I think a lot of people might overlook. And that's at the south end of Lake Garda. And then as you move further north, you get into towns like Trento, which is about 100,000 people. Another town a little bit further north is Bolzano, which is in Sud Tyrol and very close to the Austrian border. So all of these are really cool little jumping off points that would offer enough stuff to do, a little bit of other, you know, expats or digital nomads, co-working spaces, gyms, good food, good community, you know, decent community. So I think that you can get enough from those places to get out and enjoy the natural beauty and explore a part of Italy that that maybe you wouldn't have gotten to before. One last thing that I'll mention about this that I think is really cool is that a lot of this area used to be Austria at one point in back before World War One. And so there's still a lot of like Austrian roots that are here. So you might often hear a lot of people speaking German, or you might see road signs in German. You'll certainly get a lot of like German food, German Austrian food. You'll see, you'll see a lot of people wearing that like traditional Bavarian garb in a lot of places. So there's something really cool for you culture nerds like me that really enjoy that fusion. Something really interesting about being in Italy and you know, especially in a stunning place like the Dolomites, while also like getting this fusion of the Italian and Austrian feedback, you know, and conversation and culture and things like that. So something to keep in mind if you're looking for a unique place. I think it can be a pretty exciting place to go to. You're also super close to Venice. I've flown in and out of Venice now and explored a lot around this whole area. So you've got a lot going on and at the same time, it's somewhat off the beaten path, I guess, in a way, as much as you can be in this part of the world. So yeah, I hope that helps you, Lily, and wish you luck. Italy's incredible. I've enjoyed a couple months here, and we'll have to be moving on before too long. But yeah, I've certainly enjoyed it and look forward to coming back. Thank you for the question. Arturo from Mexico is up next. He says, thanks for the pod. I hope you can help me. I've been able to work remotely since COVID and have been loving traveling a lot since then, in parentheses, currently living in Malta. But this week, my boss told me she wants to issue a return to office mandate starting next quarter. I think I have the chance to convince her otherwise. Any advice? Arturo, I'm sorry to hear that. You're unfortunately not alone. A lot of CEOs and leaders out there are issuing these return to office mandates because they still haven't figured out how to run teams remotely. It's unfortunate, but it is the reality for many. So first of all, you're not alone. I guess there's some misery loves company sort of thing there. But secondly, I had a similar conversation with someone recently, a CEO at another company, and who was also considering a return to office mandate. And I was able to just kind of share some data out there that I think can be kind of compelling. So I've phrased it to him like this. If you were to ask your team to take an 8% pay cut and work an extra hour per day, what would you expect of them is the better way to put it. What would you expect them to do? And the response from that person was, well, of course, that's ridiculous. Nobody would ever do that. They'd revolt. You know, I would totally see their point, was sort of the gist of the conversation. Well, if you dig into the data, actually, you don't even have to dig very deep. There's plenty of this out there. You can just Google it. the average employee right now would value workplace flexibility as about equivalent to an 8% raise. And on top of that, the average commute, at least in the U.S., just using U.S. data, is about 58 minutes. So let's say 1 hour per day, round trip. So effectively, by asking someone to return to the office, you're giving them what they perceive as the equivalent of an 8% pay cut and asking them to work an extra hour per day. It kind of clicked for that guy in that moment. And so there's lots of stats out there that you can dig deeper into the fact that, you know, in fact, the productivity is not increasing for people who are returning to the office. They're experiencing a lot of attrition and turnover because people are, you know, seeking out flexible work. So in the end, it kind of hurts the business more than it helps. Any perceived loss in productivity or, lack of camaraderie or culture or whatever is really on that person's shoulders, that leader's shoulders to figure out, not on the individuals, falling short of expectations. So a lot of times they're just leaning on their own failures as a way to justify these. And they're looking for a reason to bring people back because they figure that must be the problem. The world is changing, sorry to say, and this is just the reality. So dig into some of that data. I think you can find some compelling advice. And if you need more help, feel free to reach out again. Happy to discuss further. Next question. I loved your episode from last year with Paolo about the regime impatriati in Italy, but I hear there's some significant changes coming to this. Can you confirm, and what are you hearing about this since you're there in Italy now? It may affect my plans to move there. Emma from New Zealand. Thanks, Emma. So we will put a link to the episode that we did last year with Paolo from Studio Rigo. He's the CEO at Studio Rigo, and he and I talked for well over an hour about this amazing program that Italy's had called the Regime Impatriati that basically gave you between a 70 to 90%. It basically was a tax incentive for people to move to Italy, providing you with the chance to reduce your taxable income by 70 to 90%. So if you made $100,000, then it, depending on where you lived in Italy, the worst case scenario was you could reduce that from 100,000 to 30% of that, 70% going away, meaning that you would only be taxed on 30,000. That's more or less the gist of it. There's a lot more, of course. We talked for over an hour about this, so there is quite a bit more, and there always are with these sorts of things, but that's kind of the idea. But Emma's right. This program has changed as of January 1st, 2024. And it's way too much for me to get into here. So what I did is I reached out to Paolo at Studio Rigo and just asked him for the quick bullet points on what's been changed here. And I will put a link to that previous episode because a lot of it's still the same. They just changed some numbers and stuff. So you can go back and listen to that if you're interested. But I'll also put Paolo's information in there so you can reach out to him if you're interested. This question isn't going to be pertinent to a lot of the audience who is not considering moving to Italy, but so I just want to go over it very quickly. But for those of you that are, essentially that benefit has gone from 70 to 90% down to 50%. There is no longer the ability to extend it from 5 to 10 years. It used to be initially good for 5 years and you could extend it another 5 years. Now it's just capped at 5 years. There's also a limit on how long you have to commit to at least being here for 4 years is how I understand it. So you can't come for a year or two and then just leave. If you do it, you're committing to 4 years and you may have to like pay those taxes back. So those are some of the main bullet points. There are plenty of others. I want to like really emphasize that if you're interested in this, you have to have a conversation with a professional like Paolo. It's a very complicated process and you have to do it all very correctly. So do not try to do that on your own. Reach out to someone like Paolo and or any other professional in that space and get some advice. But yeah, there are big changes coming. And if you were planning on coming to Italy and you didn't get in before 2024, January 1st, 2024, then you are kind of out of luck. So you're under the new rules now. And you need to dig into it to better understand it, because it's definitely less attractive than it was before. But that said, it's still one of the more attractive tax incentives, at least in Europe, that I'm aware of. So anyway, still can be a great deal for you, especially if you're wanting to come live La Dolce Vita and in Italy, then, it's 50% better than 0%. And it would still put you in a preferential situation if it can apply to you. So that's the other thing I should mention, is that there is some different regulations on who can get it now. It's not just anyone and everyone. So anyway, dig into it deeper for yourself. Hopefully that answers the high level questions, but you're correct that there are changes coming. And I really want to emphasize that, you know, this is just for informational entertainment purposes. Like, you have to dig into these things on your own when it comes to taxes and legal and anything like that. I am not an accountant or a lawyer. all right, moving on to the next question. Justin from Canada says, I know you've been living in Europe for a while now and you seem to love it, but are there any other parts of the world you're eager to explore or even live in at some point? I'm also a North American living in Europe, but for a few years now, but I'm starting to feel the itch to go somewhere else and I'm just not sure where. What do you think? Any thoughts? So, Justin, thank you for the question. A little bit of context, maybe I don't talk about this much, but I have lived in a few other countries and on different continents before, and I'm currently in this chapter of my life enjoying Europe quite a bit, but you know, previously in other places, and I really enjoyed my time in Latin America, and in particular, I think that's like such an awesome place, especially when you're first getting started traveling around, or if you've traveled a bit and you're looking to settle down somewhere, it can be an awesome place. That's a very broad statement. Latin America is huge and there's a lot of countries and cultures and, variation there, but just generally speaking, like I've spent a good bit of time there and would love to go back. And I plan to, so there's quite a bit. The world's huge. I think for a lot of people, like it sounds like you are, Justin, and I know a lot of people that listen to this podcast, you can't help but feel a sense of wanderlust to go to lots of places. Like the more you see, the more you want to see, and the longer that bucket list grows. I don't know if that resonates with anyone out there, but that's definitely been my experience. So I can tell you a couple places that, I'm gonna hone in on Latin America in particular for a second, just because I've mentioned that already. But I missed out on a trip to go to Patagonia. I had everything booked, planned, and ready to go, and had to cancel last minute. And so I've been down to the south of Chile, but I didn't. It was down, the furthest south was Pucón, and I didn't make it down further into actual Patagonia. So I'm very eager to go back to southern Chile, southern Argentina, and spend some time there. I've also had some friends and family that have spent a lot of time there, in kind of off the beaten path locations. And it's just always called to me. Like I loved my time in Pucón. I loved, the trip that I had planned seemed so amazing. And so I'm really eager to get back to, in particular, like Chile and Argentina, and spend more time in those countries. And specifically, I would love to get down and spend some more time in Patagonia. I also had a similar situation arise with both Turkey and Southeast Asia. I had a Southeast Asia trip planned that got canceled because of COVID, and I had a trip that to Turkey that got canceled because of a terrorist attack, unfortunately. So those are a couple areas that are like really high on the list that I had big plans to go and explore, and I've just like missed out on them. And so when I start thinking about the places where I'm like, hey, could I go spend, a year somewhere else or 6 months or something like that? Then I, that's where my mind starts to wander, because they're places that I just haven't been able to spend a lot of time or enough time or any time in some cases. And I just feel a really strong urge to go there. As far as like living, I'm pretty settled in Europe, and also at this stage in life, like wanting to spend more time back in America with friends and family. So I'm spending a lot more time of my like quote unquote free time traveling back there to invest in those relationships. And I think if I were to switch and like make like a permanent move anywhere, it would probably just be back to North America, and then building a life of more like living there as a home base and traveling to a lot of other places more often. Actually, it's kind of connected, because, if currently as I'm living abroad away from those friends and family, when I do have free time, I kind of feel the need to go back there. But if I was living there, then I would have more time, more quote unquote free time to go and travel to other parts of the world and explore more of the rest of the world. So that's actually a point that I'm considering. There may be a side of me that gets more exploration and adventure and world travels if I were to actually be living back home, which is kind of odd. But anyway, for the time being, very settled here, happy and enjoying it. And well, as settled as someone who's, moving around every 2 to 3 months can be, I guess. Love the question though. Thank you for asking. All right. Arturo is from the US, and he says, there are a lot of digital nomad visas out there now. And to be honest, I have no idea where to begin. I'm not too picky about where I want to go. I just want to travel and use some of this newfound location independence, but it's overwhelming. Where do you start? And do you have any suggestions? Thank you, Arturo. So thinking through this, just like off the top of my head, you're right. There are effectively, maybe not completely in name, but there are effectively something like 70 digital nomad visas, like, or visas that, are essentially digital nomad visas out there in the world right now. And it can be overwhelming. Like, I don't know where I would start. So my first suggestion is to start with like where you want to go. And you say specifically, you're not picky about where you want to go. You just want to use this, but hopefully you can narrow it down, based on weather, based on language, based on what you love to do. Are you wanting big expat communities or digital nomad communities? Are you wanting to be by the beach in the mountains, big city, little city? You know, I think language is a huge thing. Is a language barrier a problem for you? Or is there a language that you want to learn? Starting with asking some of these questions and at least narrowing it down to some general ideas could be a great place to start. Since you're from the US, I will mention, you know, you have a lot of options there in the Caribbean. If you want to go live the Caribbean lifestyle for a year, I mean, you can go to almost all, I guess I shouldn't say all the islands, but most of the islands that would first come to your mind all have digital nomad visas. And there are options even like the Bahamas, I believe. I think you can go to the Bahamas for 6 months or maybe even a year. Don't quote me on that, but I think you can go there without any sort of a visa and just go. And so if you want to test this lifestyle out, it sounds like you're kind of new to this and you don't want to commit. I mean, committing to a digital nomad visa even for a year or two can be quite an undertaking. It can be expensive. It may be best just to go test it out and see if it's even for you. So in a lot of cases you can do that with, you say you're from the US. So you have, if you have an American passport, at least I know that one, for sure, you'll have lots of options there in the Caribbean. A couple others that came to mind are, Greece and Croatia. Both of those, I'm really high on both of these digital nomad visas because you don't have to, well, first of all, you can apply for them there in the country. So you can actually just travel there and then go apply once you're there. I do recommend you get all your paperwork in order ahead of time and kind of like make sure that you're eligible before doing that. But you can actually just go there, be there, apply, and you immediately get a short-term residency permit just for being there. So, or just for applying. So you have plenty of time to explore, get settled in, figure things out. And the other thing is you won't have to pay the local taxes there, which aside from just the monetary aspect of that, just the hassle of registering with a foreign the equivalent of the IRS in a foreign country is a huge pain and like a ton of bureaucracy. And yeah, it's something you'll have to do in a lot of other countries, but in those two particular countries, they don't really want your tax dollars. They just want you to be there for a year or so. So those are a couple really good options just because of ease. And also like, you're not going to hate Greece. You're not going to hate Croatia. you're going to have a good time there and you can travel around other parts of Europe. You're going to enjoy the islands and the beautiful nature and the water. And there's good communities bursting up there of people like yourself that are enjoying their location independence. So those are two other ones that really came to mind. And then I'll list off three others just really quickly. Almost everyone would say Portugal is a good option. They don't, they're not short on publicity or nomads or expats. It's the number one country in the world for this sort of thing. So you can go and do the same there. They are changing. There's some pushback against this community a little bit from the public. So there is something to consider there, but you're going to have a fantastic time in Portugal, and you can certainly go there and have, enjoy the digital nomad lifestyle on their nomad visa. Two others that may fly a little bit under the radar for you. One, Japan just came out with a digital nomad visa. So you should look into that. I don't have any experience with it. Nothing in detail that I can necessarily share, except that if I were just starting out on my quest to enjoy this location independence, as you said, I would be considering Japan. That's a very new one. It's very, very interesting. It's far off, exotic. I think that could be a very cool experience and a great way to dip your toe into the water. If you actually don't want to dip your toe in the water, if you just want to dive in head first. Consider that. And then lastly, I'm just going to mention Argentina. I talked a little bit about Argentina in the last question, but what an amazing country. And you can literally just go there. Like, you don't even need to do the digital nomad visa. We recently had Nathan on, who is an American that usually lives in Mexico and bounces around all over the world, but he's been really enjoying Argentina lately and talked a lot about this in our episode, how you can basically just go there and just be there. So again, if you don't want to go through the bureaucracy of having to do a digital nomad visa, you've got everything you could ever want in Buenos Aires and surrounding around Argentina. And I think you could have a fantastic time. So that's a handful of places. Quick shout out to Lexity, our sponsor, one of our sponsors that will help with those visas in Europe that I mentioned, Greece and Portugal, as well as Spain and France and Italy. Anything that you need in those countries, they can help with. So if those, you know, caught your ear, then you can reach out to Lexity via the link in the show notes, and they can help you out. All right, moving on to the next question. We're steaming along at a really nice pace. Have you ever considered doing an About Abroad retreat or meetup? I'd love to attend, and I wonder if other travelers would as well. Just a thought. Tia, currently en route to Thailand. Ah, wish you safe travels, Tia, and thank you for the awesome question. We actually had a few of these and get them not all the time, but I mean, you know, somewhat regularly people will ask if there's ever going to be like a in-person meetup. And I would love to do that. I think that sounds awesome. I love planning retreats. I love bringing people together. I love interacting with you all, the audience. So if anyone is actually interested in that, like legitimately interested, reach out, or maybe we'll put a link to this, to a poll or something in the show notes. But in any case, reach out, let me know if you're interested. It's definitely crossed my mind before, and I think it could be a lot of fun. I'd love to know where people would like to go, what they'd love to do, and see what we do. I know some other friends of mine who host podcasts, particularly in the travel space, have done this and have really enjoyed it. So I think it could be great. And I would absolutely love more opportunities to interact with you all. So that sounds awesome. Let me know if it sounds interesting. And to answer your question, Tia, yes, it has definitely crossed the mind, and I would love to put it together. We'll be right back to the show after a quick break for a note from our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by my friends over at My Expat Taxes. For my fellow Americans out there, we all know tax season is upon us. And for anyone who's ever had the pleasure of dealing with multiple tax agencies in multiple countries, you know this can be a challenging experience. That's why when it comes to dealing with anything tax related abroad, I always recommend hiring a pro to help you navigate this unknown space. In my experience, this not only saves you time and spares you from the unnecessary headaches, it also has literally saved me thousands of dollars in taxes over the years. So I am super excited to introduce you to My Expat Taxes, a true pro in this space that focuses 100% on U.S. expat taxes. Whether you're filing for 2023, catching up on back taxes, predicting a future tax obligation for a future move abroad, or just looking for some guidance, My Expat Taxes has your back with speedy and affordable online filing options and real human accountants to assist you as needed. Join the more than 16,000 other Americans living abroad who have used their services by visiting myexpattaxes.com via the link in the show notes. If you've made it this far into the episode and you're still enjoying yourself, then I would love to ask a quick favor. Open up the app that you're using to listen to this podcast and leave a quick review. You can do this in Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and really just about any platform that allows podcast listening now. If you can't find that in the interface of the app, then scroll down in the show notes and find ratethispodcast.com/aboutabroad, and you should be able to leave it from there. Thanks so much, guys. We really appreciate it and hope you enjoy the rest of the show. All right, we have moved along very quickly, so I'm getting to the last question here. Actually, this is a couple questions that all came in that were all kind of touching on something very similar, and so I decided to kind of like wrap them up into one question and one story. So this one says, I'm thinking of moving to Spain, but one pain point I hear is that you have to get a Spanish driver's license, and that it can be extremely costly and time-consuming. I thought I could just use my international license, but is this not true? That came from Nate in the UK. And then someone else, Jai, currently island hopping in Indonesia. That sounds fun. Jai said, what was the most annoying thing you experienced living in Spain? Living there seems great, but I know there must be downsides and nobody talks about them. I also happen to be having a couple different conversations with a couple different friends about this whole issue of driver's licenses in Spain. And I've come to learn not just in Spain and other countries as well. So let me tell a little story or explain a little bit more about this. So the first thing is that when you travel internationally, and you know you want to go just take a trip abroad. Generally speaking, your home country driver's license is gonna work abroad. You can also get like a international driver's license usually, which is like pretty easy to get using. So I could just take my, for example, my U.S. driver's license and go to, for those of you from the U.S., you'll know like a AAA or something like that. There's lots of ways to do this. You can just Google how to get an international driver's license. It's very easy. It's just kind of like a paper version of your driver's license that says you're good to drive internationally. A lot of times, even when you get like a rental contract for a car in a foreign country, it might even say you need the international driver's license. I have literally never had to show an international driver's license. I've rented cars in 30, 40 different countries. I don't know how many countries, and I've never had to show this. So I don't know how useful it is. I don't know if it varies from country to country or, you know, person to person or whatever, but I've never had to use that. So when I moved to Spain, I remember hearing early on at some point, you know, that you have to get a Spanish driver's license. And I thought, oh no, that's ridiculous. Like, I have a US driver's license. I can rent a car in Spain using this same license. Why would I suddenly, because I'm living here, have to get a Spanish driver's license? Like, it should work, right? And even if it wouldn't work, I should just be able to show the police, my US driver's license, and they're not going to know that I live here. So, you know, I'll just put on the American accent and play dumb tourist, right? So generally speaking, that's what everybody says. Like, I talked to plenty of other expats and people living there, like, yeah, that's what we do. You're never going to get that ticket. You know, don't worry about it. Well, I'm the guy that got that ticket. I got pulled over for a BS reason related to not being able to see my driver's license because of a bike rack on the back or whatever. And I tried to do just using my American accent, just not speaking Spanish. And they said, oh, the guy spoke English. And I was like, damn, okay, we really got to do this. And he was very inquisitive about my situation. And then basically he told me, yeah, hey, look, man, you're kind of breaking the law. You've been here for over a year. You're supposed to have a driver's license from Spain. So first of all, I'm fining you, which was a very expensive fine. And then secondly, I want to say it was around like 500 euros. So $550 more or less, something like that. But on top of that, actually, I'll say he then proceeded to tell me he was giving me a deal. And if I paid it within 10 days, it would only be 50% of that total. So if it was $500, 500 euros, it would go down to 250 euros. I came to find out that was true of all tickets in Spain. he was not doing me any favors. That was just the protocol. So I did pay it within 10 days, got my 50% off. But the cop was not doing me any favors. So secondly, what that meant was that I then had to go through the process of getting a driver's license. And I thought, okay, yeah, like, how hard can it actually be? I've been driving for 20 years. This should be pretty easy. It turns out it was not easy. I literally had to study for months. I had to do hundreds of practice tests for the theory part. I ended up failing the driver's portion even after taking like 5 or 6 actual driving lessons with a teacher, like a driving instructor, who basically told me the first day, we're just going to unteach you everything that you've learned about driving so that you can just pass this test. So tons of little things about the way that you're taught to drive in America, like setting aside rules and laws and signs that are different and all of that, like all of that you had to learn. And that was hard enough, and the questions were poorly translated and tricky enough, and like purposefully tricky, by the way, like really trying to get you to fail, and very obscure, you're driving in a motorcycle with a sidecar that seats 2 people, and the speed limit is 60 kilometers per hour, but there's a white dotted line on your left and a yellow solid line on your right. How fast should you actually be going? You know, and you're like, and there's some formula to get there, or some waste truck is in front of you, and this particular waste truck has a load of this much and this sign on its back and the speed limit's this much. So how many meters behind it do you have to stay? Like, very specific. Like, they make it extremely hard. And very different from my experience in the US, which I did when I was 16 and I felt like I didn't even have to try. So anyway, after months of studying, multiple lessons with a driving instructor who's teaching me to unlearn all the things that I've learned. Like, for example, to hold the clutch in first gear before you're about to take off at a, when you're sitting at a red light, for example, as opposed to having the car in neutral. All these little things you could fail the test for. And I did fail, because I touched a solid white line with the back tire when the instructor told me to merge right. And I did, it was a trick. So anyway, all of this being said, it is a process. It is very expensive. It is super annoying and bureaucratic, and everybody there knows it. And it's just one of those funny things that you have to embrace about being abroad. There's lots of these. There's lots of little things that arise where you say, like, oh, this kind of sucks, or I wish I didn't have to go through this. But it's also all part of the journey and kind of funny in retrospect. So yes, Nate, that is true. It is a pain, and everyone knows that it is kind of a racket. Like, you're going to spend, probably a couple thousand euros on getting your driver's license, no matter how long you've been driving. And at the same time, it's very annoying, but also kind of comical. So I probably could have pulled from a lot of different questions or a lot of different responses to answer that second part about things being annoying. It is true that there are lots of downsides to living abroad. There's lots of things that use up brain power that you just wouldn't have to do in your home country. And I think it's important to recognize those and to just be aware of them. But also, if you make the decision to go and live through those, that you just embrace it as part of the journey and learn from it and see it as, this is part of the adventure. So that's been my approach. It's worked well, for me at least. And I think it's just kind of the attitude you have to take if you're going to take on this lifestyle. So anyway, love the question. Loved reflecting back on that. And yeah, I appreciate everyone tuning into this. So I hope you all enjoyed it. We'll do another one of these in a few weeks. So in the meantime, if you have any questions, anything you want us to address here on the show, any other thoughts about what we should discuss in these Q&A sessions, please feel free to drop me a line. Again, it's chase@aboutabroad.com over email, or you can connect with me on social media at DC Warrington. We also have a contact form on the website, aboutabroad.com. So whatever works for you works for us, and we'll do our best to get to them. Love these. Thank you so much for all the great questions, and hope you all have a great rest of the day. Ciao for now. Thanks for tuning in today from wherever you are in the world. Once again, I'm Chase, and this has been another episode of About Abroad. For those of you wondering how you can best support the show, I have made it super simple for you. Just go over to the show notes of the episode that you just finished listening to and click on one of the two following links. aboutabroad.com/newsletter to get our monthly newsletter, no spam, guaranteed. Or ratethispodcast.com/aboutabroad, where you can quickly and easily leave a review for the show. It's not just important to me, it also helps more wanderers just like you find us. Finally, don't forget to subscribe on your podcast platform of choice, and we will see you again next week. Thanks again. Hasta luego, amigos.